It is Sunday morning, and we welcome in the professor, Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants. Professor, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Marty, yourself?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Back out here. I felt I should have slept here last night. Left about a quarter to 12.
Quick turnaround, isn't
it? Yeah, isn't it? You know, and I feel it for you guys. How do you feel this morning going, you know, what time did you get home last night?
Well, you know, I have to deal with the bridge and the tunnel, so it takes me a little bit. But I feel great. You know, we're back here. You know, you sleep in the off season. Yeah, there's Mark Gardner. He's going in to listen right now.
Mother's Day. Let's start off with that. And I know everyone listening around the world, it's Mother's Day and very special day for everybody. Maybe get some thoughts of, and it really impacts baseball players much more than many other people in walks of life. Mothers have a big part in the role of getting kids to games and the uniforms and everything else. So Mother's Day for you?
Well, there probably should be three or four Mother's Day, you know, in the course of a year, because that's how important they are. I mean, my mom, like everybody else, you just said it, they bring you to the games, they care for you, unconditional love, they feed you. My mom, she comes from an Italian family, you know, all you have to do is say you're hungry and she's in the kitchen cooking. But I'll tell you a quick story. I was talking to her this morning. She's back in Connecticut, and you know, they're always worried about you and want to make sure you're fine. Unlike dads, you know, us being young men growing up, we got smacked around by dad when we did something stupid. But moms, you know, they're always there. They soft sell it. They could talk to you and reason with you. I was talking to my mom this morning, and she says she was talking to a friend of hers. Her friend's 90 years old. Okay. And out of the blue, she brings up, you know, I was talking to Mary. And Mary said that her son, when he was younger, he burned down their garage.
Okay.
And I said, really, Mom? And he said, wow. And she goes, so I just want to let you know, you shouldn't feel so bad that time you started that grass fire when you were 13 years old. So I said, okay, Mom, thanks. There she is 40 years later, and she wants to make sure I'm okay with the grass fire I started as an adolescent. So, you know, that's Mom, and it never stops. It never stops.
Yeah, you see with the ball players a lot, and I went around Friday and got some nice rejoinders of messages to mothers today. So we'll play some of those for the ball players today.
They deserve it. I mean, everybody should really, if you really think about it, you know, time goes by and we're all busy. Yeah. But something special for mom. They definitely deserve it.
Well, my mother used to come to the Little League games, you know, and there I was in Miami Beach. And the bleachers, and I'd be playing as a 10 or 11-year-old, and Yvette was out there and watching me play. And I played Little League football and all this kind of stuff, and I was a center. I used to long snap to her before I'd go to the game,
you know,
from about 8 yards away.
Sure.
You know, just to warm up, and it's amazing. Mothers are very versatile. You know, they're tough. Fathers, we sort of go to pieces pretty often, but mothers are pretty strong.
That's right. That's right. Well, there's a lot of moms out there watching the game. So in that light, moms, you just keep doing what you're doing and be supportive of the kids and let dad yell at the umpire at the Little League games. You know, let them get thrown out and make the fool of themselves. You just keep that steady hand that you often have.
My mother was a big Marlin fan. Of course, you know, the family lives in Miami.
Okay.
You know, Renee and Marilyn are still down there. And she couldn't stand Braden Looper. Is it Braden Looper? Looper.
I think, yeah, it was Brandon. Anyways,
the reliever.
Right.
She'd call me up, and she's in her 90s. They're bringing him in.
I know. Isn't that something? How they watch game. I mean, my mom watches as much as she possibly can, and she has her favorites, too, and it's fun to talk about with
them. It is. All right, let's go to school a little bit with the professor. And, you know, I watch things during the week, and they've seen a couple of plays, not necessarily that the Giants do, but other teams, you're getting runners thrown out from second to third on ground balls to the left side. And you see this, and Crawford will go in the hole, make a great play, and throw to the third baseman. I saw a couple of plays during the week where the third baseman wasn't in proper territory, and he was doing the cha-cha trying to get to the bag. Runners, second to third, what do you have to look for?
Well, you know, the first thing is that is kind of a cardinal sin on the bases, getting thrown out at third and a ball hit to short. I mean, that's the first thing you probably need to do before you even look for it to happen is anticipate and go over where the ball is going to be hit. You know, if it's hit to my right, what do I do? If it's hit to my left, Where's the shortstop playing? That's the number one thing. You got to see where the shortstop's playing and know where he's at. So you know if he goes to his left towards second base, I can get to third. Now, if it's hit at him or to his right, you're not going to be able to get to third. So there's some preparation there. You also have to know if the ball's hit slow. You have to go over in your mind, now, if the ball's hit slow to my right, I could get to third base. So a lot of this is just not going over the scenario and the ball's hit and reacting instead of being prepared and knowing what you should do. And, hey, base running is probably the most overlooked area of the game in the major leagues today.
You know, part of it, I think, is someone wanting to get a good jump and scoring from second, and you think it's going to go through. A lot of those plays are now shortstop, the range now, Crawford's range, Hechavarria. You know, you look at the range of these guys, and you think a ball is going through, and then all of a sudden they get you, and then they throw to third to get you. I think that's part of it. And I guess there's the anticipation. I want to score,
right,
but you got to take your time. And I always say you want to make sure that you see the ball go past the shortstop before you take off.
Right, and that comes into play. You know, so when you're on the bases and you're looking in the home plate, if you know where the shortstop is behind you and the ball's hit to your left as a runner, you got a good chance to go. You're going to break right away. But to your point, when the ball is hit to your right, and you may think it's past the third baseman or the shortstop can't get it, and that's where that ball comes into play, trying to score, wanting to advance, but not reading that ball the way you should and breaking too soon. I mean, if that shortstop has a chance to catch it, you have to hold your ground, and so be it. And you won't score, but you'll get to third base, and you won't be out.
Yeah, if you're a slower runner, you want to get that jump, and you want to get that run. Tight game. A lot, you know, baseball is beautiful. There's so many variables. You know, 2-2 game, maybe you want to get that run. You want to try to score that run in the eighth inning. You want to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're always trying to score. But that's a scenario you see that happen. It happened to all of us. It's happened to me as a player. But I think the more you go over the scenarios and know where the players are behind you and anticipate the different scenarios that can happen, you're going to be much better prepared to react.
How do you feel as a coach when it doesn't go well and the runner's got to come into the dugout? Is one of those you just like to say, well, keep going?
You know, you know, it's funny. You never know what to do, right? You see it a lot. A guy drives in a run, you know, gets a big base hit for you, and then he pulls some blunder on the bases. So he gets picked off or something he shouldn't have done, something that's bad. He walks in the dugout and, what do you say? Hey, nice hit. Way to swing the bat. Way to swing the bat. Good job.
Yeah, do you correct people? I don't know. You know, every manager, every style is different. Some Billy Martin maybe would get on a guy's right in his grill coming in. How do you guys do it?
Yeah, well, you know, in today's game, first of all, the player knows he messed up. I mean, you know, I don't think that's the best time necessarily to approach somebody. They already feel bad. They know they screwed up. These guys play the game for a living, and they know how to play the game, and this stuff happens. They're not perfect. None of us are perfect. We make mistakes. And, you know, if it's something more in detail that you think you can help them, you may ask them about it later. Probably, you know, later on in the day or the next day, and you could talk about the scenario and see if, you know, what he was thinking and if there's something that he could have done or if his thinking was right. So, and then you move forward from there.
That's the way the old kangaroo court used to be.
Sure.
You know, you guys still, you don't do that anymore.
You know, we're not doing it this year, but I think Bam Bam has, not a kangaroo court, but he has a little game, hitting game where he keeps track of, you know, two out RBIs and you know, guys advancing runners, all the little things that you want your players to do in the course of a game. Just not, you know, base hits, but, you know, two out, hitting runners in scoring position, advancing guy, getting a runner in from third. And that's another way to emphasize, you know, what's important. And to your point is the kangaroo court. We had it a lot in the minor leagues and absolutely loved it. There was a few fights, you know, and because guys didn't want to pay and guys would really go after one another. But as long as the majority of it was baseball related, you know, bonehead plays on the bases, you'd get fined for that, you know. So that would make guys aware of those types of plays. It wasn't just, you know, well, you're doing something off the field and you're getting, no, it wasn't about that. It was about baseball-related plays the majority of the time. But inevitably what happens is guys start getting carried away and they start fining each other for everything, right? It goes from baseball into the clubhouse till they're at home. You don't see it a whole lot.
Well, it's a camaraderie of baseball, which helps as well, as long as it's not mean-spirited. I think I think back to the kangaroo courts. Frank Robinson, I think I remember seeing a picture of him wearing a mop on his head, you know, as the judge.
Sure.
I remember seeing that. Dwayne, I wonder if Dwayne had kangaroo court with Frank Robinson.
Oh, he might have. I mean, it was very, very popular for a long, long time. And we've done it here over the years. Same thing, I think, when Aubrey Huff was here, okay. I remember us having kangaroo court. And you guys have fun with it, you know, like you said, as long as it's not mean-spirited. But it's always on the edge. It's always on the edge.
How'd you like the ceremony for Morse the other day? And I bring it up this way and talked about it on the show. You know, you guys are together for 7 months, you know, and you travel together in the most pressurized game you could ever imagine, where, you know, if you succeed 3 out of 10, you're a Hall of Famer. And then you get a guy like Morse with the big smile and the enthusiasm and the Viking helmets, and then he comes back and gets the ring, and what an outpouring of love for him.
Yeah, and it should be, because what we were able to accomplish is very, very special, and it's special to him. You know, unfortunately, he's not back with us, but, you know, he chose to go sign with Miami, and that's where he landed. But it doesn't take away from what he did for us and with us. And I was talking to Brett Butler before the game yesterday, and he brought that up. You know, he said it really touched him, you know, and how great the Giants are. It really is family that Mike comes back, and just the way everybody went out there and hugged him and thanked him for helping us accomplish that great feat. You know, that touched Brett Butler, who's an ex-Giant. And he says, you know, that's why the Giants are like a family. And, well-deserved moment. And, you know, you get emotional. I do anyways. You know, you thank him for his contributions. He's not with you, and you get to relive that moment one more time.
Dan Jennings, the general manager of the Marlins, came up to me. I was chatting with him. I've seen him in the press box when he was with Tampa Bay a lot. And he brought up the same thing. About how the Giants organization and how the Marlin players were just flabbergasted at what happened, and it was very instructive for them.
Yeah, well, we do things right here. We do the organization, Larry, and everything that events and
pretty good,
and you know, the reunions and things like that. And I'm glad we were able to do that for Mike here on the field. I guess Pablo's getting his ring today or tomorrow.
Yes,
they're in town, but it won't be on the field. But I'm sure he'll be real happy to get it.
Yeah, it'll be in the coffee shop of the hotel.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, one last thing about Morse. He was a good, funny guy. I guess that's what I was getting at with you guys travel together. Some people have to keep the clubhouse light.
Yeah.
And you've run across people like that in your career, I'm sure, from your playing career and your long time in baseball. Who are the guys who keep the clubhouse light?
Well, you know, the guy that comes to mind now, because my memory comes and goes, but for us, it's Sean Dunston here, with the coaches. I mean, even in the coaches' room, you know, if we have a bunch of everybody's serious all the time and, you know, straightforward, you know, you have to break it up, as you're saying. And Sean keeps it interesting for us. He keeps it light. But you need those players. Back to Morse, he was a real good teammate, fit right in here and did keep it light. And the guys loved him. They loved having him on the club, loves to have fun. And, you know, he's always smiling when he plays the game.
Very good. Getting back to the professor here, once again, the powers to be in baseball, you know, this collective bargaining agreement is coming up in 2016, and they're talking about the DH for the National League again. And I've said this on the show many times. We have to be heard. People listen to the show, and people in National League cities have to be heard. But how do you feel about it? Because Tony Clark's the head of the union, a former DH. There's this very, you know, people, well, you're not with the times if you don't want a DH in both leagues. How do you feel about it?
Well, my personal opinion is, first off, I've been in the National League my whole life. You know, even when I was managing in the minor leagues, it was, you know, National League baseball and being a bench coach. You know, I enjoy the National League game. There's so much more going on in the course of a game than there is when there's a DH. All the decisions you have to make with the pitcher, do you get your pitcher through the inning because he's coming up, or do you double switch and take out one of your better players because, you know, your pitching staff is beat up and you double switch to save your pitching so he doesn't go out and get one out and then he hits two batters later. Now you got to take him out of the game. You can run through all your guys. So there's a lot more thinking to it. And I've heard people over the years say, well, that's not necessarily true. The American League, you know, there's a lot of thinking and there's tough decisions as well, but it's not even close for me. I would be real disappointed if the DH comes into both leagues. I think, you know, baseball's a thinking man's game, and there's never been a clock. We're starting to get the clock on it, which, you know, I think speeding it up a little bit's okay, but don't change the game too much. But I'm afraid that, you know, money and the unions are going to be in favor of the DH for all the obvious reasons. You know, pitchers, they won't have to hit. They won't necessarily get hurt.
More runs.
You know, another player for the union to have, another hitter that can stay in the game. That was a big thing when the DH came into the American League, why the union wanted it, because they could have another older player that could stay on the field and make some money. So we'll see. I hope there is an uproar from fans across the country to speak out to preserve the National League style of baseball.
Yeah, we'll see. You go into Houston, though. I guess it's timely that we talk about it. That is an American. You know, everybody say you go into Houston, I keep thinking it's a National League city. It's not. It's an American League city. You see Jose Altuve, McHugh, you're going to see. We haven't seen him, but he's been excellent as a pitcher for the Astros. But here you go. You have to prepare differently. The game is different. And I guess this is the issue. You go into an American League city. Now you have to have a DH. Have to play differently. How does it impact you getting ready?
Yeah, well, you're right. The biggest impact is we don't see these guys, but every few years. We haven't played Houston, in 3 years? And, you know, most of the players are different. So they have a lot of young players that we don't know. So just getting to know their players is quite a bit different. Obviously, we get to use a DH, which for us is a little bit of a break. It's an opportunity to get another guy in the lineup, or, you know, to rest, say, Buster Posey.
Absolutely.
Because he's catching all the time. We want him in the lineup as often as possible. So you can DH him, you know, to give him a breather. I'm sure he's going to be one of the options to DH. So that's where it impacts you the most, is in those two items.
Yeah, but here you go. This is what we've talked about, getting ready to play under different rules. And here you go. You've played 31 games, 32 today under a certain set of rules. And now you're going to come in and you have to adjust. Is it that easy just to adjust? And you've done in the World Series, in the playoffs.
Well, it's much easier to adjust for
going
a National League team playing with the DH than it is an American League team having their pitcher hit, because they don't deal with all the nuances of the double switch, and they don't have to face those decisions daily, take the pitcher out or who to pinch hit. You know, I think their teams are constructed a little bit different. You know, when they lose their DH, they're losing an awful big bat. And you can argue a lot of the National League teams, when they get a chance to DH, they don't have a legitimate DH threat like the American League has. So it's much easier for us to do it. And, you know, on the downside as well to the American League teams, I mean, I feel for them when they have to come into a National League park and their pitchers don't hit, and now they have to hit. You worry about them getting hurt.
Yeah, look at the Angels. I mean, I'm just thinking that when this homestand started, I'm not even thinking them as an American League team. They just were another team that came in and played in this park.
Well, you're right. They're probably the one American League team that you think they're a National League team, because they hit and run, they steal bases, and I think their pitcher, you know, maybe it wasn't him that got the big hit. It was Herring the other night.
Yeah.
But, they're used to playing that game. But still, you know, the fear of the pitchers getting hurt. I mean, for years I've watched, I won't mention the team, the American League team, but when they come play us, they wouldn't let their pitcher swing. And you still see that once in a while. The pitcher, starting pitcher for the American League team playing in our park, won't swing the bat because they're worried that he's going to get hurt, and they don't want to lose him for the rest of the season.
I saw the A's do that.
Well, you named the team. There you
really?
Go.
I remember Mark Mulder would stand there. Yeah,
yeah, they've done that quite a bit, and you know, that's the difficult thing here. I mean, now that interleague play is throughout the course of the year, I don't like it as much, honestly, personally. I think it's more suited to have it for a couple months during the season and then be done with it for that particular reason. I think it's more difficult for these teams to, you know, play 3 weeks, and then for 1 week they're playing, and now their pitcher has to hit. Now they go another month where the pitchers don't hit. Now, you know, 3 weeks later the pitcher's hitting again. How do they prepare them? You know, it's stop and go, it's stop and go. At least the other way, they're going to be 2 months of interleague. They can prepare their pitchers to hit and you know, make sure they're in shape to do that as well. I think it's easier to keep the guys healthy doing it the old way than it is now, all over the place.
Well, we'll see. This is going to be a topic of baseball. We'll see how that plays out. Our take a break. The professor is with us. Yesterday in Milwaukee, one of the time-honored traditions of sort of congratulating someone on a milestone, and you never know what's going to happen in the dugout. And it happened with Chris Bryant yesterday. I thought it was pretty funny. We'll talk to Ron Wotus, the bench coach of the Giants, about it right after this on the Sports Leader.
KNBR 680.